Welcome to the Wildlife Health Talks. This is the 33rd episode introducing WDA members and their amazing work all over the world. We all love to see a conservation project on a previously endangered wildlife species succeed. But what happens if a formerly small population grows to a point where its size becomes unsustainable? Performing a cull? Definitely not the most pleasant option. My guest works on a way more ethical solution. She develops and tests immunocastration vaccines for the population control of wildlife species. In addition, she has worked on a range of infectious diseases in small wild carnivores. My guest, Dr. Amei Cheng, completed her degree in veterinary medicine and her PhD at the National Ping Tong University of Science and Technology in Taiwan. Since February this year, she has been working as a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Tasmania in Australia. Welcome to the show, Amei.
Yes, hello everyone. Nice to see you on the air.
Amei, tell me, when did you join the WDA?
Well, truly, I joined the WDA quite early. I joined the WDA activity like the wear banner when I was a poor vet student, I think maybe around 2013. But however, right now I'm graduate from the school and I become a real member, the paid member, only a few years ago. I think around 2020.
Nice. Well, I think you did very well joining as a poor student. Tell me, what's your favorite WDA related experience?
Oh, I think it's this podcast, the Wildlife Health Talk. I have listened to the Wildlife Health Talk since last year, since the first episode. And it's really cool for me to know what the other vets are doing around the world. And it's truly really amazing that, yes, I'm here.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm blushing a little bit. That's very kind of you to say. It makes me very happy. Tell me, so you did your vet degree and your PhD in your home country in Taiwan, but you spent quite a bit of time overseas to expand your training. So you sent me your CV so I could prepare properly, which was really interesting to read. So as a visiting researcher, you spent a couple of months each in Canada, in Japan, in Thailand, and you even did several wildlife externships in the US. Tell me, what was your favorite part about working in so many different countries and cultures?
I think this is a really difficult question. First, I need to thank for my supervisor. My supervisor supports my traveling budget. So that's a chance I can meet so many people, so many different places. And usually the place I choose is which the place attract me always is the natural environment there. And the different countries like Canada, Japan, and Thailand, and USA, they have different natural habitat. And they also have different kind of wildlife. So I truly enjoy each trip every time. But if you ask me to choose one, I think I will choose Australia. And especially the place, Tasmania, the place I'm staying now. And why I choose Tasmania, as you know, Australia has many different kinds of weird and wonderful animals. So that's the reason why I choose Australia.
That's awesome. And since I've lived in Australia for 7 years, I can fully identify with it. And I would say you are even luckier than me. Well, I lived in Sydney, right? And you live in Tasmania, which is full of the iconic Australian wildlife. So I understand you very well. And you are actually working on a very iconic Tasmanian animal. Tell me a bit more about that.
Oh, yes. The reason why I come to Tasmania have two topics. And right now I work at the Menzies Institute for Medical Research in the University of Tasmania. And my supervisor is Andy Fleiss. And right now I have two main work here. And one is participating in the field vaccine test of the Tasmanian devil. And in Tasmanian devil, we found a strain transmission cancer that will decrease the population rate of the Tasmanian devil. And the second topic is develop a novel immunocastration vaccine to control the invasive rat species here. So which really matched to my previous research before.
Now I have to ask you a question about the Tasmanian devil facial tumor because, yeah, having lived in Australia for many years, I heard lots about this disease. And, yeah, it's obviously a big concern. So how far advanced is the development of a vaccine at this stage?
Mm-hmm. Right now, we already have primary vaccine right now. But because the DFT have different strains, have DFT1 and DFT2, so we want to try the vaccine efficacy different to two strains.
Right. And how promising is that? Like, is the expectation that it will kind of protect really, well, every single Tasmanian devil might be a bit too hopeful, but are there any expectations regarding the efficacy of the vaccine?
I think it's pretty well. Soon after, we will try the animal experience, so we will know the right answer in the future.
Nice. We definitely have to follow up on that. I'm very excited to learn more in the future. And to be fair, you just started your postdoc, so I will give you a few more months to come up with a solution.
Yes.
And you already mentioned that another area of expertise of yours is the immune castration, vaccination and wildlife. And can you remind us a little bit about the concept, how it works?
Oh, okay, no problem. Let me describe how the immunocastration vaccine works. I use my research as the example. After the pandemic of the COVID-19, I think most of the people know how the vaccine can against the virus, but how the vaccine can against the reproductive function. For the immunocastration vaccine, we try to against our target hormone, GnRH, which called the gonadotropin-releasing hormone. This kind of hormone can regulate the sexual development. And after we give the injection to the animal, and inducing a specific antibody to against our own GnRH, we can inhibit the downstream hormone regulation, which means that we can inhibit the development of the testes and ovary. So thereby, we can control the fertility in the future.
That sounds pretty clever. You mainly work with wildlife, but you also started experimenting with this concept in mice and in domestic dogs, and then applied it to Sika deer in Taiwan. I mean, obviously mice, dogs, and deer are quite different. How universally applicable is this method across different mammal species?
So before we discuss this question, we need to know that GnRH, this kind of hormone, is a highly conserved decapeptide in usually, I think, almost all mammals. I try to compare the GnRH sequence of the different mammal species like mice, dogs, and Sika deer from the NCBI gene bank. And I noticed that they all the same. So due to the high similarity between each species GnRH sequence, so we can believe that this vaccine, if it works on the mice, we can apply it to the dog or other mammal species like Sika deer.
That's very cool. And how long does this vaccine usually last?
This is a hard question to tell because we try to test this vaccine in different animal species. And I found that the different animal species have the different immune response. And there are many factors can affect the immune response, including age, sex, species, and even the health of the different individual. However, during the animal experiment, I found one interesting that I noticed the relationship between the lifespan and effect of the vaccine. For example, I tried the vaccine on the mice, and usually the lifespan on the mice is 2 years. So after vaccination twice, and it can maintain the antibody for 24 weeks. Even so, the antibody decreased. the testes still atrophy and the sperm quality is still poor. So it showed that this vaccine for the mice is non-reversible. However, we also tried the animal experiment on the dog. The situation is a little bit different. The average lifespan of the mixed-bred dog in Taiwan is around 20 years. And after the vaccination, the antibody also maintained 24 weeks, which this is similar to the mice. But we noticed that after that, the decreasing antibody gradually, the dog testes will become larger. So it looks like this vaccine in the dog is reversible.
Do you think that is because the dog is just a more long-lived breed? Or do you have any idea what other factors might play into that, that there's a difference between mice and dogs?
I think it's because the antibody maintained for 24 weeks, it had already contained half of the life of the mice. So after we stop their reproductive function, it's not easy for them to reversible again. But for the dog, it's different. So you will have the different result.
Okay. And I guess that's kind of cool in a way, right? That in certain species, it might be reversible because that means that, yeah, if there's a need or the option for reproduction again, then it's not a one-way street. That's a good thing, right?
Like, yes, but this is also the most difficult part. So if you want to apply to other animal, I think we need to do another animal experiment to know how is this vaccine efficacy in different species.
Do you have any other study species in mind you would like to test for this?
We want to test in the Zika deer in the future.
Ah, okay, cool. So, but let's briefly go back to the dogs. So you work with domestic dogs and their owners to test the vaccine. Do you think this could be a viable alternative to surgical castration in the near future?
I think the immunocastration vaccine is suitable for some certain owner, but not old. The vaccine is suitable for the dog at risk under the anesthesia for the surgery, such as the elder dog. And I think this vaccine has also another important method, important part is to provide more option for the owner to regarding the dog fertility control. In Taiwan, some owner refuse to sterilize their dog because they believe that the surgery really hurt their dog. And sometimes after the surgery, the dog will die. So the owner don't want to do the surgery. So I think it's a good method to provide more option for the owner to choose how to control the fertility of their dog. So for me, the most important goal is try to encourage the owner because without appropriate management of the dog, the overpopulation situation in Taiwan is really serious.
You already mentioned the Zika deer in Taiwan. Tell us a bit about their situation. Why did it become necessary to control the population of the Zika deer in the Kenting National Park in Taiwan?
I've seen the situation is quite familiar to the overpopulation of the wild-caught deer in the United States. The Formosa Zika deer is one of the subspecies of Zika deer in Taiwan. And the Zika deer don't have the nappy predator. So the population of Zika deer has exploded and also leading to increased conflict between the human and also the wildlife. And the mostly occur problem is the agriculture and the damage of the forest. And additionally, Kenting National Park is one of the popular places for visitors to visit. But the overpopulation of the animal and the high density of the visitor, both of them increase the chance of the traffic accident happen. Due to that reason, it's important and necessary to control the population of Zika deer in Taiwan.
I bet you also studied if there are any consequences for the population other than obviously the reproduction stopping or slowing down. Like, are there any changes in the social structure expected from the vaccinations?
For this part, I also think about it. I try to do the reference review. And I found that some vaccination on the free-range animal, and they use the radio tracker to tracking the activity of the individual. And they found that there was no difference between the individual got the vaccination or non-vaccinated in the wild-boar research. However, I need to mention here, because we will apply in different kind of wildlife species. So for some certain species, especially for the social animal like macaque or the deer, we need to conduct more observation before applying the vaccine to the field. And here I use the deer as the example because we already have some preliminary result of the Sika deer. And we know that it can induce a softening of the male deer's antlers. Antler play a central role in the deer mating behavior. It can become a weapon for them to competition between different males. So we found that after vaccination of the male Sika deer, because due to the decreasing of the testosterone, the antler will become soft. It's really bad. So we noticed that this vaccine, if we want to apply it to the deer population, we only can focus on female, but not the male. So we need to modify different methods to control the population in different strategies.
Oh, wow, that is so interesting. See, I would have thought that the male deer might not actually grow any antlers, but they do after the vaccination, but then they become really soft. So yeah, I get that this is a real problem. Besides immunocastration, you did research on several infectious diseases of wildlife in Taiwan. Tell us a bit more about that.
Oh, yes, the infectious disease of the wildlife is also another my interesting topic. And I'm interested especially the disease, like transmission between the domestic and the wildlife dog, or wildlife and domestic animal. Because due to the overlap habitat, they will activate in the same area. And during our previous research, I have an example about the parvovirus in the leopard cat. The leopard cat is an endangered species in Taiwan. And we noticed that we tried to collect the sample from the leopard cat, and we found that we can detect all strains of the parvovirus, like CPV2A, 2B, 2C, and also feline parvovirus in the leopard cat population. And we do sequencing of those virus, and the sequencing data is the same, 100% the same from the domestic dog and the cat in Taiwan. And additionally, we found that the population size is also important, maybe it could cause disease. The high density of the animal can increase the contract rate of the transmission disease. So in the future, I hope to combine these two different fields, the population control and the infectious disease.
And has the parvovirus had a large impact on the leopard cat population yet? Or is that just something you are afraid might happen in the future?
Oh, I think it affects the mortality rate and the survival rate of the leopard cat. In our previous study, we tried to compare the sample we collect from the captured individual and the individual from the roadkill. And we found that the roadkill individual had the higher prevalence of the parvovirus, which is significantly higher than the captured one. And because we also do some monitor the radio tracking of the leopard cat individual, and if possible, we can collect the sample several times. And once we found the individual has the parvovirus, and we will lose the signal of this individual. I think this disease will have impact to the fitness of the leopard cat population and decrease their survival rate.
I recommend to everyone to look up what the leopard cat looked like. I did that too, and it's incredibly cute. It looks like just a leopard version of a house cat. Amazing.
Yeah.
I bet they're not quite as friendly as most house cats are, but, they look very cute. Thanks so much for being my guest on the show. It was really cool to learn about your work.
Yeah, thank you for interviewing me. It's my great honor to be here to share my research with other people.
And thanks for listening to the Wider Health Talks. We will be back with a new story in 2 weeks. Bye for now.